Good morning. All right, before I get into the sermon, I do have a piece of personal business. I promised a good friend in the church in Knoxville that while I was here, I would attempt to recruit a baritone to move to Knoxville. We want you to relocate to Knoxville so you can be part of a gospel quartet. So if you're a baritone and you're interested in relocating to Knoxville, come see me. Hope you're having a blessed Feast of Tabernacles. There's a TV show, I don't know if it's currently running, it's run in different iterations over the years. It's called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? My question is, who doesn't? It was at the time of this story, it was being hosted by a lady by the name of Meredith Vieira. And one day there was a contestant who made it all the way to the last question, which meant that if she got the question right, she'd win $1 million. If she got it wrong, she's only going to win $25,000. Boo-hoo. But as she suspected, when the questions advanced, they got a lot tougher. So she got to the million-dollar question, and the question was this. Which of the following species of birds does not build its own nest, but instead lays its eggs in the nests of other birds? The choices are the condor, the buzzard, the cuckoo, or the vulture. Well, Deborah was on the spot because she didn't know the answer. And she was doubly on the spot because she had already used her 50-50 lifeline and her audience poll question. If you knew this show, you understand what I'm saying. She had these options that she could rely on and reach out to. All that was remained to her was her phone a friend option. That was her last lifeline. She had hoped she wasn't going to use it because the friend that she had chosen was a really good friend, but she lacked some common sense and didn't always make good decisions. So she was leaving her for last. She didn't want to have to use her. But she had no alternative. So she called her friend and she gave her the question and the four choices. She's on the phone with her. And her friend said without any hesitation, "That's easy. The answer is C, the cuckoo." Did I mention that Deborah's friend was blonde? Now, I don't normally tell blonde jokes, but suffer with me a little bit. And Deborah, because of her friend's nature, had discounted her intelligence a little bit. So Deborah had to make a decision and make it fast. Now, the first thing that occurred to her is whatever her friend says, say something different. Don't take her answer. She considered employing that reverse strategy. But considering the friend was the way she was and the way she answered the question, although choosing the other options was a logical thing to do, her friend had responded with so much confidence, such certitude, that Deborah decided she couldn't help but take her answer. She was persuaded. And Meredith Vieira says, "I need an answer." Well, Deborah crossed her fingers and said, "See, the cuckoo. Is that your final answer?" Deborah crossed her fingers again and said, "Yes, that is my final answer." And Meredith Vieira suddenly said, "That answer is absolutely correct. You won $1 million. And confetti falls from the ceiling, and Deborah gets up and dances around, and it's a big party. She's jumping up and down and happy. So 3 days later, Deborah hosted a party for her family and friends, because she's a millionaire now. And she included amongst her friends at the party her blonde friend, Jenny. And she said to her, "Jenny, I just don't know how to thank you. How did you happen to know the right answer?" And Jenny says, "Oh, come on. Everybody knows cuckoos don't build nests. They live in clocks." Now, Deborah was faced with a situation that she had to overcome. And she overcame by phoning a friend. And it just so happened to work out, didn't it? So let's think about overcoming. Overcoming, the word overcome basically indicates that there's something that we've got to get over or get beyond somehow. Sometimes, and I'll tell you, it's tough. Sometimes I wonder how some of you are able to get by with the level of difficulties you face. A lot of our friends and family of faith really struggle, and Larry shared some in the Blessing of the Children segment. I try to keep up with a printed prayer list for our local congregation, and I also share it with a fairly broad team of prayer warriors. Anybody want to buy a prayer list? But seriously, it can almost be overwhelming sometimes because people have heartaches, they have hardships, they have such overwhelming situations and obstacles that they face. And so we pray for folks. We offer words of encouragement or try to. And I think of how the Messiah, on the night that he was preparing his disciples and the next day he was going to make his sacrifice, he was seeking to uplift and encourage his disciples in spite of the fact he could see his death just a few hours away. But he was trying to encourage them. In John chapter 16, we'll pick it up in verse 25. We see what Jesus said. He says, "These things I've spoken to you in figurative language, but the time is coming when I will no longer speak to you in figurative language, but I will tell you plainly about the Father. In that day you will ask in my name, and I do not say to you that I shall pray the Father for you, for the Father himself loves you because you have loved me and have believed that I came forth from God. I came forth from the Father and have come into the world. Again, I leave the world and go to the Father." His disciples said to him, "See, now you are speaking plainly and using no figure of speech. Now we are sure that you know all things and have no need that anyone should question you. By this we believe that you came forth from God." And Jesus answered them, says, "Do you now believe? Indeed, the hour is coming, yes, has now come, that you will be scattered, each to his own, and will leave me alone. And yet I'm not alone, because the Father is with me. These things have I spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." What did Jesus do here? Well, for one thing, he told them the truth, and these were not really pleasant truths, were they? Wasn't what they wanted to hear. He told them, "Yes, you tell me now that you believe, but you're all going to abandon me." They didn't want to hear that, obviously. And he continues. He says, "No, not only that, but you're going to suffer tribulation. Hard times are coming on you." Also something you wouldn't want to hear. But he concludes with encouragement. He says, "These bad things are going to happen. You're going to abandon me and you're going to be tried. But I have overcome the world." Now, we are disciples of Christ, and the concept of discipling is you follow your teacher, right? You do what they do, you say what they say, you learn from them and follow their example. Whereas disciples of Christ, we need to do what he is doing. He overcame the world, and he's calling you and I as the church of God, as the family of faith, to overcome as well. In the letters to the churches that John reveals in the book of Revelation, in chapters 2 and 3, 7 times it mentions the concept of overcoming. Let's go to Revelation 2:7. We see the church at Ephesus, the message to the church at Ephesus. He says, "He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." Through him who overcomes, in the church in Smyrna, in verse 11, he says, "He who has an ear to hear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." To the church in Pergamos, verse 17, he says, "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat, and I will give him a white stone, and on the stone a new name written, which no one knows except him who receives it." And I got to tell you, folks, there's a little inset here. It's tough to not preach on these things when you come across them and expound on some of these things, because there's meat in there that's worthy of sharing. But that's for another time, another place. To the church in Thyatira in verses 25 through 28, he says, "Hold fast what you have till I come, and he who overcomes and keeps my words unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations. He shall rule them with a rod of iron. They shall be dashed to pieces like the potter's vessels. Also, as also I have received from my Father, and I will give him," the overcomer, "the morning star," to the church in Sardis, verse 5 of chapter 3. "He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels." Here's the one everyone wants to be. The sixth church, the church at Philadelphia, chapter 3, verse 12. "He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go out no more. And I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem, which comes down out of heaven from my God, and I will write on him my new name." And then finally, the church at Laodicea, chapter 3, verse 21. "To him who overcomes." I'm going to stop there and point out to you, nobody wants to be the church at Laodicea. Figuratively, we think of the church eras and church ages and try to align ourselves or learn the lessons from them. Nobody wants to be from Laodicea because of the negative context of Laodicea. But look what it says. "To the church in Laodicea, to him who overcomes." God expects, even in the Laodicean church, overcomers. He expects us to overcome. "To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne." Now, if we're ever going to sit down in the seat of authority and help rule this little planet, we're going to have to overcome some things. Are we in the process of overcoming today? I would hazard to say that all of us in the year 2020 have had some things to overcome. We overcame to be able to attend the Feast of Tabernacles this year, more so than in previous years, I believe. If we're ever going to sit down with him, we're going to have to overcome. So we're living in turbulent times, and it may seem like, it may feel like, and I'll be honest, I do feel like this is perhaps the beginning of sorrows, the beginning of birth pangs for the tribulation to come before the second coming of Christ. But whether it is or not, these are tribulations. These are difficult times. So are there things that continue to present themselves as obstacles to us in our lives that won't let us lead a normal life? How many of you wonder if we're ever going to be normal again because of what we've been through this year? Things, obstacles, challenges can rob us of the joy in our lives. And there are things that we can deal with or look at and face as individuals and things as church. I want to go over just a handful of things here. How about health issues? Is there anybody that you know, maybe yourself, who has a health issue? Come on, you know somebody who has a health issue. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we've got cancer. We got diabetes. We have chronic pain. There's people who live with pain every day. What about relationship issues? How about heartbreak? Abandonment, divorce, grief over the loss of a loved one. Those are all very personal things that we have to somehow overcome. What about other personal issues like anxiety? You know anybody who's anxious? People who have fear, doubt, depression. How about evil thoughts or bad habits? Okay, how about this one? Money issues. Not all of us got on the TV and won $1 million, did we? So some of us have got money issues. Some of us find out that there's too much month at the end of the money. And some of us have gone through bankruptcy and other money issues. What about weather emergencies? There's one right over here, right? West of us. Thank you, God, that it's going west. I'm sorry it's going to hit Louisiana, but I'm thankful it's not hitting here. There's hurricanes, there's floods, there's tornado. I woke up from a dream this morning driving my pickup truck into floodwaters, and I thought, that's a bad idea. So I tried to turn around, and the truck was floating by the time I got it turned around. So that's something in my subconscious that brought that out. There are weather emergencies. There are business and job issues. People lose their jobs, or their businesses have a downturn or outright fail. And there's a lot of businesses in the last few months because of what's happened in this shutdown and reset that have failed or in the process of failing. How about just outright fear? There's things to fear. How about political unrest, riots, shortages of food? What are we going to do if the power goes out? I don't have one of those generators that will run my house when the power goes out. So we have all these things we could be fearful of. But let's think about it for a moment. What could we as a church, the believers' family, what kind of obstacles may we be facing that we have to overcome? How about loss of members due to schisms? And it can be something like general politics that divides churches. It could be personal habits. It could be personal opinions. But churches divide. And that may be something we have to overcome. What about fears of governmental intrusions? Earlier this year, they told us you can't have church. And we already were doing the streaming thing, so we just kept streaming. But David Truen and I and a couple other people would go to church, and we put on a church service on the internet, and our people weren't allowed to come to church. We can have that kind of thing come on us again. What about accusations of hate speech? There are certain things that we say from the Bible that people will say, well, that's hate speech. You can't get away with that. That's not acceptable. And of course, we could have loss of freedom to assemble due to the health issues. And there's one other thing as church, I think, that we have to be aware that we may have to overcome, and that's tares. You're familiar with the concept of wheat and tares. The trick is you can't tell the wheat from the tares when you look at it. But tares rob the nourishment from the other plants, the plants that were intended to be planted. So we can see tares robbing the nourishment from the church body by bringing in maybe abominations, false doctrines, divisions, schisms. So I think if we could break up into small groups and have a meeting, we could come up with a very comprehensive list of things that we would have to be able to overcome. But we'll just leave it at that. Now, Revelation chapter 12, and we'll pick it up in verse 7. War broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found there for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels cast out with him. It amazes me that he's still up there accusing, because that's what he does. He's up there accusing. Verse 10, now I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ has come. For the accuser of our brethren who accused them before God day and night has been cast down. He is still working against you. He's still working against me. Now look at this, verse 11. These are the ones who are accused before God, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows he has but a short time. They overcame. Drop down to verse 17 now. And the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. This woman is the Israel of God. It is the church. It is Israel. It is the remnant of her seed, but it's a very specific portion of the remnant, the one who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, when the adversary is cast down, this time it's forever. You know, he's been cast down before, but God lets him come back up there. He's doing a job, and he's trying to sabotage us. This time it's forever. He and his demons are never again going to have access to the throne of heaven or stand and accuse us before God. So how do these believers, the Israel of God, overcome? They relied on the sacrifice blood of the Lamb of God and by their testimony. They stood strong and they did not waver from their position. But notice this. They did not love their lives to the death. It cost them their lives. You know, somehow you think that overcoming should involve not dying. Don't you think? But they love not their lives to the death, and they overcame. They overcame even in death. I can imagine the saints of God in the arena in Rome. Can you imagine this with me? You're huddled together with your family members and maybe some of your friends from the assembly. And the crowd in the arena is screaming for your blood. And they open the gate across the arena. And the crowd cheers as wild animals are released and begin running straight for you and your family. I see us huddled together as these beasts charge us. I hear the voices of the saints of God singing. Singing. Not screaming. Singing. And they sang also as they were tied to a stake and a fire was lit at their feet. They sang praises to God. Why? Because that was their final testimony. They were testifying that the God who sent His Son was going to claim them and make them His own, even as they died. You see, it is possible they were set on fire, they were ripped to pieces, and yet they could sing praises to God. So as they died, did they lose or did they overcome? I believe they overcame. They didn't recant. They didn't say, just let me out of here, I'll worship whichever God you tell me. No, they held true to their faith. We have an angry and evil adversary that wants to kill each and every one of us. Why? Because it's the only way he can hurt God. Because God loved us so much, he sacrificed of himself, his own son, for us to become part of his family, adopted now and born later. We can overcome that evil adversary. We can. And we can live a victorious life as disciples of the Messiah because we are a remnant people who keep the commandments and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. What we face at times can seem insurmountable, but the promises of God through the Messiah are worth hanging on to. They are worth standing for and refusing to recant. So, you know, sometimes we're faced with challenges and we're stumped. How am I going to get through this? Well, remember, Deborah was stumped and she called a friend. You can call a friend. We have a friend. Our friend knows all the answers and he can help us to overcome. We'll face challenges, we'll face obstacles, but by the strength of God and with His help, we shall overcome.